Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, friends and neighbors. Welcome to the Midnight Garden. I am your host, Mudtoe Sasquatch. What should I talk about? Thank you for stopping by. By the way, my mind is occupied with other things this evening. And I shall try to sort those out and set those aside and give you the kind of well-considered, well-spoken show that you've come to expect. In the meantime, please bear with me. Memorial Day weekend is an odd one for me. There are two really. I'm getting older. There are getting to be more and more odd times. I probably have more odd times than regular times anymore. But Memorial Day weekend is probably the time of the greatest triumph of my young life when I was young. And it's odd to think of it because I always think back on it as that was a tremendous time and portending great things. And the things got left in that one spot. And it leaves me to wonder what I was about to say, what went wrong. I don't know if it's... I don't think if it's a matter of going wrong or what were the steps that I took off of the path, or was that this just a part of the path that I was supposed to experience for whatever reason. But let me tell you, first of all, it's been so long. It's been like 35 years. It has been exactly 35 years since my high school graduation. And back in the day, they had a ceremony at the cemetery that's near our home, the house where I grew up. And if you were a senior in high school, you had the opportunity to participate in that ceremony in a number of different ways. One of them was that the powers that be selected two seniors. One of them would recite the Gettysburg Address, because Memorial Day is very hooked into the Civil War. That's when it started. And then the other person would read, wasn't required to memorize this, but would read what's called Logan's Orders. And Logan was a general, and he was the first to decree that there should be a day set aside for remembering fallen veterans. And it's important to remember, Memorial Day is for veterans, is for soldiers, sailors, etc., who died in the service of the country. Veterans Day in November is for everybody who ever served. Okay, it's a much broader thing. Memorial Day is for people who died. And then also somewhere in there is Armed Forces Day, which is for people who are serving now. But so there are three separate holidays, and it is required of us that we remember which one is which, and remember which one we are observing at any given time, so that we don't upset anyone. But anyway, as I said, there are these two high school seniors. One would do the Gettysburg Address, and one would read Logan's Orders, which is what General Logan wrote. Say, we're going to do this thing. Have everybody come out and decorate the tombstones and put out flags and have speeches and do. We're going to have this day to honor his particular group, what was it? I used to know this. It's whatever battalion it was or whatever he was in charge of, his group was doing it. And that's actually happened in 1868, several years after the war ended. And it was, I don't know if it was because it was successful or just some other people saw it and said that's a good idea, but other people started doing it. And then at a later point, the government picked it up, and the rest is history, as they say. So this is a, being one of the speakers was an exalted position because all of the mayor was up there, and the director of the local VFW, and a number of local luminaries, local very, very important people. Now at 18, I didn't know who the hell they were. I knew who the mayor was, but other than that, I never seen these guys before. So I skipped that part of the story. I got to be one of the two people. I got to be the one who read the Logan's Orders. Remember, it was Kelly Kennedy was the daughter of local Judge Kennedy, and she did Gettysburg Address, and then I did Logan's Orders, and it was, I mean, I was reading words off a piece of paper, and I am a pretty fluent reader. I read well aloud. So I got up there and I did this thing, and it evidently made an impression on a lot of people. Walked up to me later and said how good they thought it was. And, you know, these were important people. And I was always someone who had a lot of self-doubt. I wasn't sure about myself, about whether, you know, am I really any good, or do I just remember things well? You know, is my record of accomplishment in school, you know, I'm sorry, my computer started doing weird things. It's going to try and download some important updates are pending. And it's going to get a big surprise when it realizes there's no Wi-Fi in the house. And anyway, let's let it go ahead and do what it wants to do. And of course, back on in Memorial Day in 1983, we did not have these Wi-Fi struggles. In fact, I worked that summer after I graduated, I was recruited to work at the high school. They had just obtained a number of Apple IIe computers and had pirated some software from a nearby high school. And but there was no instructions, you know, because they had pirated it. So this way, I mean, it worked very complicated, you know, security. You could copy anything. You copy a program and onto another for had a floppy disk. You copied onto another floppy disk and you had another copy. There wasn't a whole lot to it. So I spent a summer after the big Memorial Day triumph. I spent a summer in the library at the high school running these programs and taking notes on them, you know, for what grade level do I think it's for and all that. And then have teachers come in and talk to me from time to time, see how I was doing, and give me some pointers on how to figure out, you know, the kind of information they were looking for and how to find it. I played a lot of Oregon Trail that summer, and making $6 an hour, which was more. I think minimum wage was $3.15. Minimum wage was $3.15 at that time. I also did some working out of the park, cutting the grass for $3.15 an hour. And then sometimes I get to go into the air conditioned splendor of the local library, the school library, I mean, and run those programs. I play the Oregon Trail and play the there was another one about building an empire. Which I just remember I see that Rise of Empires, the video game, and all those similar ones they have now. There weren't any pictures. It was just words. It's saying, you know, 500,000 peasants are starving. You know, do you release, you know, grain from the granaries, or do you let them starve, or do you conquer a nearby country to steal their grain? You know, those sort of things. And you'd give it everything, just about everything was there. Oregon Trail had graphics, but most of the other stuff. I remember one too where you had to launch a space shuttle into orbit. You know, you had to get the angle and the velocity just right so that we get into orbit. And that had some fairly sophisticated graphics for the time. That was a good 3 years before we actually lost the space shuttles, the Challenger anyway. So it was just good fun getting that thing up into orbit. And I about the middle of the summer, I was asked to go to a luncheon of one of these. What was it? Was it Kiwanis or something? I don't can't remember if it was Kiwanis or something else. But the school was hitting them up for money, you know, to improve, you know, get more computers, improve what they had. And I was there to tell them, you know, what I was working on. And it was astonishing. I'm standing up there and all of these, you know, business people in suits and ties were looking at me and listening to me talk. And later on that summer, they sent a number of business people came to the school to learn how to use the computers and take that knowledge back with them. They've learned some word processing and some spreadsheets and some basic computer skills. And I was teaching that class, and I was learning. I would sit down in the afternoon before the class, and I would I'd have the material. I'd have the course material. It was a pre-planned course. And I would learn it. I would learn it the afternoon before, and then I would do it. I would teach it that night. It was an astonishing time. Oh, almost forgot to mention, my father was in one of those classes. He came in to learn about computers, and we played it pretty cool for most of the time. But he got into a fix once they couldn't get out of it. And I said to them, "No, Dad, it's here." And then you blew the whole thing. We tried to make it so I didn't want to know he was my father. Just not like playing favorites or anything. But a good laugh was had by on. That was, it was a magical summer. It's like everything from the time. And I'd gotten to be one of the speakers at graduation as well, and my speech there was, well, I mean, whoever really says they like a graduation speech, and people came up to me and said they liked my graduation speech. I kept it a little late, but anyway, so from that point, the point of, you know, writing that speech and having it be picked as, you know, one of the ones they evaluated, and then had me go on to do it, and then. Then the Memorial Day thing happened, and then the computer thing happened, and then the Kiwanis or whoever it was thing happened, and then being my dad's teacher happened. Just thing after just boom, 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 boom. It's just I can't remember a time in my life when I felt so validated, and I felt that this, you know, I have ability, I have talent, and this is going to work. And that, I can't say, it's being too gloomy to say that was the pinnacle, that was the peak. Because I went on, I had to, you know, I went on and did okay in college, not as well as everyone had hoped I would. But I did well enough, and I got my degree, and I went out and started working in industry. And, you know, within 6 months, as is the way it worked at the time, you know, they just gave me to a senior engineer, and I watched him, and they, you know, give me my own little thing to do, and then another little thing to do, and before you know it, I'm doing everything that the senior engineer does. And that's, you know, it took me about 6 months to get to that point, and then I'm going to the meetings, and I'm representing, and I'm talking about the things we're working on, and I'm going to international licensee meetings, and you know, American Ceramic Society meetings, and, you know, Steel Society meetings, and meeting with the muckety mucks at other companies. It was a time when I felt bulletproof. Not that I was much of a risk taker, at least not at work. In my personal life, I took some pretty crazy risks, which came back to haunt me. And were, I think, a big part of why that that period of my life ended so ignominiously. But it wasn't something to say, okay, I made that bad decision and that's what cost me my job. Nothing ever happened like that. I guess sort of like the anxiousness that comes with knowing that my personal life is a mess would affect my performance at work, and that's how things began to degrade, let's say, over a period of years. And probably, again, over a period of years, it happened very slowly to the point where I can't, it's hard for me to discern, you know, at this point, looking back on it, where certain things happened and how certain, but the memory of that time before it all started to, all started to fall apart. That's really the thing. It fell apart at the end. It all, things started to become unstuck. The professional part of my life was strong and remained strong for a long time after it really didn't have any business being strong anymore. My personal life started to fall apart almost as soon as I got out of school. My professional life didn't start falling apart until, say, 10, 12 years ago. 12 years ago is probably good. And then, the final stroke was when the funds got cut off my job at the university, and that's been 6 years ago. And I have been, I would have to say, adrift since then. I don't like it. I don't like that at all. And reached a point where it's difficult now. It's difficult now for me to take care of myself. And it's difficult for me to look forward and see how and when things are ever going to be any better than they are now. So when we come up on this time of year, when we come up to that last week of May, I get a deep sense of emptiness and a thought for what was and what might have been. And not thinking of, you know, I never had any sort of illusions that I was going to conquer the world. I wanted to be very good at what I did, and I wanted to be known for what I did. You know, within the circle of professionals that I worked with, I wanted to be well known and well respected. I didn't have to be, you know, not looking for nationwide, you know, anything like that. Just to be well thought of in my corner of the world. And that didn't happen. And I don't know. It's poignant to me because the only thing that was ever really important to me. I mean, I got involved in relationships because it made me feel like everybody else. You know, I wanted, that's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to get married and have kids. So I did that. Didn't pay near enough attention to who I was doing with, and that became a problem. But I mean, those were things I did that I thought they went along with that, and I was sort of surprised that they weren't as easy for me as the rest of it seemed to be. The development of my professional life and how I proceeded along that vector. It was like falling off a log. It was extraordinarily easy for me. I didn't have to put a lot of effort in. The rest of it, you know, managing my personal life was horribly difficult by comparison, and I was never able to put those things together. Still not able to. What's happened is my professional life has sunk to the level of my personal life. They're both the same now. you know, to the point where I don't, you know, my relationship being something that I valued, I'm not real sure why, but still this nagging feeling that it's something that I need to do, but I can't, I cannot fathom how I'm going to do it, how that will happen. So I'm thinking about young Mudtoe, 18-year-old Mudtoe. I have a picture of myself. I couldn't find it when I was home this past week, and I was at my parents' house somewhere. And I remember I was wearing this blue suit and tie, and my hair really too long for the occasion. And I remember a battle with my mother about how, you know, should I get my hair cut really short? And kind of it was a halfway Prince Valiant, halfway Paul McCartney type of haircut. And it's too long for that crowd. I'm standing there. The photograph is me standing behind this podium, and it's a stone, it's a granite platform in a certain place in the cemetery where they have these types of ceremonies. And it's got sort of a Stonehenge thing on top of it, not rough like Stonehenge is. I guess you see more like a columns, like a Roman sort of thing, except they aren't the columns aren't shaped. This is coming up above the platform, this big thing that comes above it, and it's Lemert, I think, or Lemert or Lemert, the guy who is named after. I don't know why I remember that, but his name is carved in it. And so it's me at the podium, the mayor and the FDW guy and different people on either side participating in the ceremony. And again, these are the people who get up later on and, you know, tell me how well they thought I did. But I look at that photograph and I remember that moment. And a time when anything seemed possible, when everything seemed possible. Part of me yearns to recapture that. And I guess I'm repeating myself now. I don't see how that happens. I see myself, you know, I think the most I could aspire to is to remain at something like this subsistence level until Social Security starts in 14 years, presuming it's still around when I get there. And then living on a prisoner, I mean, that would actually, it's not, you know, it's certainly not Taj Mahal living, but so a Social Security check would be about twice what I'm making now. Social Security, when I get there, will be a huge step up for me. And, of course, you know, the living expenses will go along with it. And the reason I'm able to live on so little is that government helps me out. My folks help me out. I work what I can. You know, I do part-time retail. I'm a part-time retailer. That's what it looks like I'm going to be standing behind that podium on that platform with the mayor and the VFW guy and those other people. So where should it be 35 years from now? Selling shoes, 15 hours a week when I can get it, if I'm lucky. 15 hours a week would probably keep me, you know, would keep my nose above water, and I'm having trouble even getting that. I think I said that they brought a new manager and an assistant manager from another state, and you know, more hours have to go to that person. And now also some of their salespeople who are coming back from college and are you're working here over the summer, and they're going to be soaking up some hours as well. So now I'm looking, in addition to looking to my full-time job, which is still, you're looking for 6 years. That sticks in my head, but I still, I keep looking, hope against hope, I keep looking. But now, in addition to that, I'm going to have to look for another summer job, so I can supplement the, I believe, because I don't have my stuff I do for the medical school. I'm going to have something else. And so I'm too late to apply for the zoo, but I did see that part-time jobs at the state fair are available, and I haven't been to the state fair in a number of years. I'd like to go, and they said in the little ad that if you work there, then you can, when you're not working there, you can come back to the fair for free anytime you want to. That's a pretty good deal. Unfortunately, it doesn't provide for all the fried Snickers that I want, the deep fried Snickers. I tried that. Oh, that's a gooey mess. And subsequently, any kind of deep fried, that's equals the state fair as any kind of deep fried treat you can possibly imagine. And lemonade, of course, and I like the lemonade. Last time I was there, they had a lemonade stand. A gentleman and his three sons, or maybe they were nephews, they all looked very much alike, and they were all wearing the same T-shirts. And he had them all taught how to upsell. So you go up, and you'd have, I think it was like $3, or the large with the special cup was $5. And you just, as you were waiting in line, you'd hear these four different voices all kind of, you go to $5, you go this, you go to $5, you go this, $5, you go this. And then they teach me their own version of that at the shoe store. I waited on an alpha lady at the shoe store tonight. And it's always fun. She knew exactly what she wanted. That's okay. There's nothing, absolutely nothing wrong with this at all. She came in, she knew exactly what she wanted, but she kept asking questions. And it's odd to suggest questions, but she just doesn't want answers to questions because she already knows what she wants. And she was in the store for about 15 minutes until she finally bought the two pairs of shoes. It was exactly the pair of shoes she came in for. And I found myself thinking, I wonder what she does, for a living. And I have to think it's probably something very much like I thought I would be doing for a living at this point in my life. You want to say that to the young people, the younger people. Use me as a warning. Warn me to tell others, tell them my story. Because your life can go away. Those things that you planned for yourself, the world doesn't care about them. And just in time for me to become too maudlin, my 90-second warning has sounded. This goes probably the first time in a long time I've stuck with basically the same topic all the way through the 30 minutes. Proud of myself. It's pretty good. And not too terribly whiny, just descriptive. I think so, anyway. So anyway, thank you for coming along and coming on this journey with me. Come back next week and see if I can come up with something more cheerful. Don't know. I rarely succeed at that. But anyway, it won't be this. It'll be something else. And thank you for listening, and have a pleasant good evening.